Hey everybody, welcome to the Bold Sidebar Podcast, a podcast for lawyers, judges, and professionals serving clients. I am your host, Attorney Jeff Horn. My task is to interview the best of us to discover the tips, tricks, and techniques you need to serve your client and keep your sanity. Enjoy. I'm excited to be here with my friend Dave Simanchik. He's an attorney. He's been an attorney going on 25 or more years. I'll have to figure out the math here. He was kind enough, although I've known Dave a long time, he was kind enough to give me a little resume and a little bio, and that tickled my interest because, number one, we went to the same undergraduate college. I didn't know that, Rutgers undergrad, so that's not a bad thing. And let me just get a little more official. So Dave has his own office and has had his own office for over 20 years. He is a rifleman. He's a Marine, as they say. Every Marine is a rifleman. I can spit that out. So he can handle just about any kind of law, but one of his specialties is kind of interesting, and that is working out debts with the government. That sounds scary just on its face. He's the expert. He's the go-to guy for that. I want him to talk about that a little bit with us here today because that's a real unique specialty. There are not that many practitioners who dance on that dance floor. He's also a bankruptcy expert and has a lot of capabilities. We'll get into a couple of the other names here. He's in the past, who he worked for, I won't forget to mention Art Stein and also Judge Huber. Well, with that, I'm going to throw it to Dave and let him say a couple of words, and we'll get rolling.
Well, thanks for having me, Jeff. I think it's another innovative way for Jeff Horn to be out there and teaching people about the world, and I appreciate being here for sure. Everything you said is, I think, accurate. I mean, in terms of expertise, you always hope that you're... My grandfather always said that jack of all trades, master of none. And oftentimes when lawyers practice in many areas, you become a jack of all trades and master of none. But I've been fortunate enough in the last really 20 years to spend a lot of time in the bankruptcy area and in the area of tax problem resolution, I call it. And so I've been able to spend a lot of time doing that and become, I think, more of a master than you know, a guy who just fools around with it.
Well, that's how I look at you for sure. You wowed me with some of these numbers here. Over 100 personal injury and workers' comp cases, over 600 Chapter 7 discharges, business transactions, et cetera, et cetera. But really, getting into that focused area helps your mind cleanse itself of complexity and just really, really focus in. You know, I'm willing to just dive in and get out of order because one of the things you told me a few years ago is when you're working on these tax resolution cases, it's you and your clients, David and Goliath, against the federal government. You know, where do you start?
Well, I think the first thing is you kind of have to gauge where people are, the taxpayer we're talking about.
Yeah.
You and me and anybody else. How eager are you to resolve your problem? Because a lot of times people will come to me and they've been hiding under a rock for years. And I mean, I just had a guy yesterday. He hasn't filed his state sales tax returns in like 8 years because he's afraid that when he files his first one, they're going to come back and look at all the other years and hit him with some crazy certificate of debt that's going to cause a big problem in every aspect of his financial life. So you got to find out where people are at, where they really want to resolve their problem or not. Because if they don't, yeah, they'll retain me. They'll give me money to work on it, but then they disappear again.
Right.
It's like the funniest thing. I mean, they might give me $2,500 to just work on their file, and all of a sudden they don't do what they're supposed to do, like provide me the documents I need to, you know, retain a CPA to prepare a tax return or something like that. They just kind of like drop off the face of the earth again. But yeah. there are some really anxious people that really do want to get their thing resolved, and I can help them with that.
Yeah, yeah. Satisfying thing, I imagine.
I like it because, frankly, it may seem like a gray area in a lot of mm-hmm. ways. It's gray, but the interesting thing is that most people kind of are freaked out about it. They have to deal with a letter from the IRS or the state of New mm-hmm. Jersey, and because they're so afraid that, you know, what's going to happen? What's going to happen if you owe taxes? You got a problem, because guess what? They don't even have to sue you. For instance, the IRS, if you owe the money, they assess the tax. You don't pay it, they can essentially file their federal tax lien, and they can go after your bank account, your wages, without any kind of lawsuit or anything. Right. So it's a very powerful way to get their money. IRS is a big collection agency.
Yeah, yeah. I can only imagine. I do have clients come and are in that state of fear and send them over to you. But again, I never can gauge if they're sincere or if they want to stay underneath that rock a while longer.
Yeah. You know, I always ask people, like, are you on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most serious about resolving your problem, right, where are you? And, you know, usually people are around 9 or 10, but you don't really know until they provide what they're supposed to provide. But their records are so poor, they have really no records of income or expenses and that type of thing. So it's hard for them to provide the information that I need. But what's really interesting, though, is these people that I deal with, so many times they will end up giving thousands of dollars to companies from California or Florida or Colorado or these national type of tax problem solvers without even seeing the people. They're talking on the phone, and what they have is expert salespeople that freak the people out. They say, you don't know what's going to happen to you. This is the worst thing in your world. I mean, you're going to go down bad.
And
and by the end of the conversation, the person's giving them a credit card over the phone. It's really amazing. And to this day, I still don't understand why folks don't reach out to a local attorney or CPA, because CPAs, attorneys, and enrolled agents can do the kind of work I'm doing. But mm-hmm. I don't understand.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I wanted to get to that. We've all been bombarded on the TV, on the cable TV, on the radio with these IRS companies. If you owe more than $10,000 in tax, call us today, and all that kind of thing. And so what you're saying is these people are not getting service. They're getting a sales pitch, first off.
What the primary focus of these companies are is to instill fear. If these people aren't scared enough,
right,
the idea is that they want to pump them up even more in order that they open up their checkbook or their credit card.
Right.
And that's the MO. And oftentimes they'll write the check, and then if you want to talk to that person again, you'll never talk to that person again, because that person was a salesman.
Mm.
Hopefully that company does have a lawyer that's actually tasked with that case and actually does something for you. Or maybe it's somebody like a CPA or an enrolled agent at that big company, but you don't really know. And again, these people will call back and not get any satisfaction. And I've had a lot of people that have come to me to try and fix the problem. And in some cases, I've been able to get some money back from the companies. That's rare, but it does happen.
Well, yeah. I guess on this topic, you know, so all of us have had these clients come in from time to time who have these tax problems and are in that state of fear. I try to calm them down a little bit and then get them in the right hands. So why don't we do both? Why don't we scare them, tell them a story or two about the really, really bad stuff that can happen, and then let's swing back to the other side. You got a problem. You need to resolve it. You know, what can happen if this resolution process goes the right way?
I'm of the same mind as you. I mean, you do have to advise somebody of what the problems are, the ultimate hammer that can hit you over the head and destroy your life. But I think as an attorney, no matter whether it's this area of practice or other areas of practice, you're not there to get people more afraid. You should be there to try and solve their problem. And
right.
So I do my best to try and come up with a proposed resolution that's going to work for them. For instance, if you owe a large amount of money, that's usually one of the best opportunities to work what we call an offer and compromise. So the more money you owe, the better chance is that you're going to get away with not paying as much. And it's a very simple process in terms of theoretically, anyway. You have to just look at what your disposable income is at the end of the month, and you have
right.
to look at what your net assets are valued at, goes through the calculator, and that's what your offer is going to be. So if you do all those calculations, and let's say your offer is $10,000, if you owe $100,000, the offer is $10,000. If you owe $2 million, the offer is
$10,000. Oh, wow.
However, if the offer is $10,000 and you really only owe $5,000, then you have to pay the full tax,
right?
Which is really kind of interesting, but it's just a matter of just knowing what the calculations are and following through with it.
One of the great challenges in all areas of practice is getting good information from the clients who either don't have it, are reluctant to give it, or are just overwhelmed and can't process your request. And then you get into the computer technology talk of garbage in, garbage out. How key is getting good info to your job?
Well, when we're talking about income taxes, for instance, let's say the Internal Revenue Service, you have a problem with the person that hasn't filed their tax returns in 5 years or 6 years. Once the person retains me, I'll get a power of attorney signed off to me, and then I'll contact the IRS, and the IRS will provide me with wage and income transcripts for the years that are in question. I really start out with contacting the practitioner's hotline and just kind of throwing it out the wall and say, listen, I got this guy came in, he wants to find out what's going on, and mm-hmm. I'll ask the particular person I'm talking to do a survey of what's going on with this person's life. And they'll be able to tell you immediately, well, within a short period of time, this guy hasn't filed tax returns in 5 years or 3 years or 8 years or whatever.
right.
And then at that point, you'll know what information you'll need, because every employer that paid that person or every person that paid that person cash, it's a business anyways. They'd file a 1099 with the IRS. There's the 1098s for interest. The IRS has all of that information.
Right.
So that's usually what I try and do, is get the information directly from the IRS, so I don't have to really worry too much about what the client is going to provide to me. The client still does have to provide, for instance, if they have to file tax returns for a business, for instance, they're going to have to be able to put together all their expenses relative to those years that have to be filed. And that's where it gets a little sticky, because a lot of these folks don't have anything. They have no proofs at all. So you're really
bad records,
stuck.
Bad record keeping. So I get the sense that this tax resolution practice is a bit of a grind, because it's you taking one client at a time, trying to batch it together and then get in front of the right people in the IRS. When I say in front of, it might be on the phone, might be electronically, it might be in letters. Is that right? Am I reading that right?
Yes, but what happens for me, I try and, number one, to get to the IRS, other than the practitioner hotline, which is pretty good if you are a practitioner, but other than the practitioner hotline, you're really going directly to the collections part of the IRS, which the average person would do as well. If they have a problem with the IRS, they get a nasty letter and they have to contact the IRS. And generally speaking, it takes about anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour to get a hold of somebody at the collections end. So I'm in my office doing other work, and usually I have about two or three clients that I want to talk to the IRS at the same time about. So that's,
okay.
It's more
gotcha.
Efficient in that
gotcha.
Regard. But it seems to me that as long as I'm prepared to talk to that person at the collections agency, I'm going to get my work done with them, that person, with all three or four people that I have at the same time.
Okay.
But it is a grind, I guess, just like any other area
yeah.
of practice, you know?
So they're not eager to get you off. After you get through one client, they're not like, okay, thanks, Mr. Symantec, have a nice day. You're like, hold on, stop.
It depends on who you're talking to. Because let me tell you, there is times when I pick up that phone And I'm sitting there for 40 minutes, and it's a collection person that just sounds scary. it's like, you don't want to talk to this person. I'll start talking, and I'll hang up. Even though I may have waited 40 minutes,
wow.
I'll hang up, and I'll just dial again. Because it's dialing for dollars. Some of these people are highly trained people that have been in the business for a long time, and they'll give you a lot of good respect and a lot of good information. But some of these people, you don't want to talk to them. You can just tell when they start talking to you.
No kidding.
Where their head's at.
It seems, from my practice, I always know who's on the other side. You know, I'm always trying to build a rapport with who's on the other side of my case. So when we run into a hot spot, you know, we don't go nuclear on each other. You know, it sounds like you're not getting much rapport building with these folks that are anonymous on the other end of the phone.
You know how lawyers are, right? Whoever we talk to, you write down who it was, their number, the day it was, all the notes that you... I still make all my notes.
Yeah.
I still will put the person's name and their ID number, but the chances of me talking to that person again on this case are very slim to nothing.
Oh, really?
I'm talking about collections only.
Okay.
That's a very – you could be talking to somebody in Philadelphia or California or Denver or who knows.
Wow.
They're all over the country, and they just – it's a pool of calls coming into them, and you don't know who you're going to talk to.
Gotcha.
That's for collections. Mm-hmm. If you end up with a bigger case where people owe $100,000 or more, you're going to end up talking to the local revenue officers at a freehold. And in that regard, you do end up talking to these same people often, and you can build a rapport just like what you're referring to.
Gotcha. So you're able to do that. You're able to make a little connection with the people for the big tickets.
Yeah, and there's some really excellent revenue officers in New Jersey that I've dealt with. Mm-hmm. Really, really good, really caring. And then on the other hand, there's a few, as in any case, that are just nasty folks that just want to give you the hardest time possible, that look for any reason to avoid going to talk to you, instead talking directly to the taxpayer, which they're not supposed to.
Right. I see. Even when you let them know, hey, I'm representing this taxpayer, they run around you anyhow.
Well, they will, and they have the right to do that if you're not responding. If you're non-responsive to their phone calls or their letters, they don't wait too long. They'll just directly go to the taxpayer. And that's rare. Hasn't really happened in my practice much, but I've heard it happening.
Gotcha. Well, it's a little peace of mind for the client that I handed this over to my lawyer and let my lawyer interact with the big bad IRS.
That is the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing. Because they don't want to talk to the IRS. They don't want nothing to do with it. And I can understand that too. When I first started the practice, I don't know, 20 years ago working in that area, it was a little trepidation that I was going through. I was like, oh man, what do I do? And what are these people like? And I was fortunate enough to get trained by some folks that have been doing it for a long time. And I kind of got the feeling that, you know, as long as you had an idea what you were talking about, you were going to be okay. And generally speaking, it's just about working a solution to the problem.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
It's not really that terrible of a job, really.
You gave me an entree there. You said people that helped you out early on. Did you have some mentor in this area of the law?
The funniest thing, you know, you'd be looking through your mail, and people send you stuff all the time, right? They're trying to attract you into their scheme of how they can make more money. And most of that stuff you throw away real quick. But for some reason, I don't know, I got a letter from a CPA out in Colorado a long time ago. It was like a book. And for some reason, I was just like, this is pretty interesting. So I figured I'd read it. And that led me to, I guess, a phone call and some more correspondence and more discussions with this guy. And
what's the name?
You know, I don't even remember the guy's name, frankly.
Oh, man,
you know,
I gotcha.
I don't even remember his name.
Wow.
And that led me to going to a couple of conferences out in Boulder.
Oh, wow.
And a great place to be. And I met a lot of good people that are local here in New Jersey as well. And it was just a good source. They provided me all of the educational information I needed in terms of the books and the statutes and just the good advice you need to work in that area. And it's just from there, it just kind of grew. And you know, you just got to keep up with it. But not much changes, really, in terms of what I do anyways.
Gotcha.
I'm not a CPA.
Right.
I don't do tax returns.
Mm-hmm.
I rely on an expert to do that. And I'm just kind of like the go-between the IRS and the taxpayer. That's what I do, just to keep the IRS away from them. That's what I do.
You know, it's funny. You talked about people helping you out, and, you know, essentially you don't want anything for it, right? They just gave you information. They gave you materials. They got you going.
Well, there were fees, of course. When it was an educational program.
Okay, gotcha.
It wasn't like, you know, they're just going to – nobody does that.
I gotcha. Unless
that's for, like, you or something.
Well,
like
that, you know? This continuing ed that you pay for, and then there's the more valuable – Ed, in my view, and I found this throughout my practice, even from my first days, if I asked a lawyer for help, they gave me help. Even if I'm sort of their competitor, right? We're head-to-head talking to clients all day long. A dollar in my pocket, maybe a dollar not in that person's pocket. I never really felt that in the law practice.
I think it's absolutely, especially for a solo like myself, you have to establish a network of people that in the different areas that you might practice in to run things by.
Yeah,
you need that. You need the ability to call somebody on the phone who has the time to talk to you. And they'll make the time usually if they like you.
I found that more than the rest of the world would view us lawyers as, you know, cutthroats. I haven't found that as much. Some areas of practice are a little more cutthroat, a little more competitive. One of my friends, Joe Lepore, told me a couple stories about guys stealing cases. Mark Harrison, another friend of ours, told me a story about his own cousin stole a personal injury case from him. I mean, that's a little over the top. But, you know, we're competitors in some ways, but we don't need to kill each other to keep alive, you know.
Lepore and Luisi, they're the best. I think they're one of the top guys in personal injury in Ocean County. And they, you know, Pete, I deal with most of the time, and, you know, he used to be working for the insurance company as an adjuster.
So
he knows both sides, man. He's such a sweet guy.
Yeah.
And, but he's so direct, and he'll give you an answer really quick.
Mm-hmm.
He'll tell you, get rid of that dog, or he got something here to work with. Yeah, he's a great guy.
That's great. So let's stay there and talk mentors, and two names pop right off your resume. Let's go right in order. The first is Judge Huber, William Huber, a Harvard Law School graduate, who I have my one Judge Huber story for, but you worked for him for a whole year,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You must have a lot of Judge Huber stories.
You know, the only reason I my father's a carpenter, right? And, my father did a lot of work at his house, at Judge Huber's house, over the years. And I think I probably was there. I swung a hammer a little bit there, worked a little bit there. So when I was around the time, you know, getting out of law school, I was just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I sent my application, and I was like, got the job. It was like, it was a no-brainer, you know. But one of the funniest things about Judge Huber, because he was just, by the time I was working with him, he'd been like, it was the prosecutor, he was a judge.
Right, he was everything.
You know, he's seen it all.
Right.
And the one thing he always said to me is like, because he, of course, you know, you're the law secretary for the chancery, right?
Yeah.
So you have to review the files and write up a dissertation about, you know, what the decision should be. And then you go talk to him about it. And he listened to you, but, you know, he had his own thoughts and processes anyways. And he would always say, well, Dave, you know, if I get it wrong, then this isn't brain surgery. They can just go ahead and appeal me if they want. You know, that was pretty much his attitude about it. And let me tell you this. The other guy that I worked for after that was Art Stein, right?
Yeah.
And I shared that story with Art Stein. And Art, he had this scowl on his face. Mm-hmm. Like, man, it figures that Judge Huber. I don't know that he had, you know, Art, he is was the quintessential. And still, I think he's kind of retired now, partially. He is an attorney's attorney. And he taught me from the beginning how to be a lawyer. And I spent 4.5 years there, and I respect him a great deal. I will tell you this, though. It was a lot of learning by fire, though. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be like, you know, let's come to court with you, Dave, and I'll show you what to do. He would just give me this file. And some of these files he gave me were crazy, a lot of big personal injury cases. But he really... He was just a mentor in a good way in terms of how a lawyer should get the job done.
Yes.
he wouldn't tell you what to do or how to do it. He would just give you the theoretical idea of, mm-hmm. of practicing law, and that was really valuable for me.
Yes, he was kind to me early in my practice in an Art Stein way, which is to shoot you right between the eyes with stuff that's good for you, but he's not going to sugarcoat it. You know, he was, that's how he was, and move on. And before I'd met him, a realtor, long retired guy named Rod Sterling, who had a real successful real estate practice around here, he told me that if you wake up Art at 3 o'clock in the morning, he's a lawyer. You know, and I thought that was such a good description of him. And I told Art that we were at a wedding, and for another friend of ours, Peter Hannis's son, a whole family of lawyers, we're at the wedding, and we're touring around Atlanta, and I'm complimenting Art, and Art loved it. You know, Art didn't need sugarcoating for compliments either, you know. So my quick Judge Huber story. Now, I came along a few years after you. So Judge Huber retired and came back on recall. So he's working 1 or 2 days a week. And my judge was out for one reason or another. I was clerking. So I go over and I sit with Judge Huber just to see the guardianship practice and some of that. He brings me in the back. Couldn't have been more kind, explaining all the cases to me. And we go out. And after a few minutes, he goes to his court clerk and says, "Who's that guy sitting over there?" So our personal connection wasn't deep, but he actually gave me a lot of good scoop that I've used in practice over the years, stuff I learned. You remember things when you first start out. Those kernels die slow. So real, real good memories from those guys. And, yeah, I did hear that Art is a semi-retired or retired, and he's got a high school mate of mine, Chris Supsey. Attorney Chris Supsey, I guess he's at the con now, years and years of experience and an old friend. So
he's a good attorney as well.
He really is. He really is. Another
he wouldn't be in the position he is taking over Art's practice unless he was an excellent attorney.
Agreed 100%. Agreed 100%. All right, let's switch gears completely, Dave. And you know, one thing that's bonded us together outside of the practice of law is routines, including a fitness routine. So I want you to take me through your day, a day in the life of Dave Semanchuk. What time do you get up? What's your morning routine? And where do you head off to?
Usually up 6, meditating for half hour, maybe longer, maybe shorter, depends on what the day is like or, you know, how yesterday was. Get in the office by 8-ish, work one file, another file. Usually when I first get in, if I haven't scheduled the workload from the night before, I'll spend the time and put it all together, spend 15 minutes, and so I know what I got to get done and try and allocate the amount of time I need. But by 1 o'clock, I'm like, God, I'm at the gym. Today I was there. I did my a little karate because I have a buddy of mine who I have to tell you about. Chris Johnson. Excellent.
Oh, Chris,
you know Chris from the gym.
I know him, yeah, yeah.
One of the most amazing things I have to say is I'm 57 right now, and I'm meeting people in the last 5 years or 4 years that are around my age that are just like becoming such close friends, and he's one of them.
That's nice.
He took me under his wing. He's been teaching me karate. He got me up to a black belt.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. In about 4 years.
Oh, man. And I'm going to be a little more afraid of you than I used to be.
But
at the gym?
Yeah.
You're training with
him? Yeah. And he doesn't charge me a thing. So we're just friends. You know, every week we're out there, sometimes twice a week, but usually once a week. We're still there. But today was a good day. I went through some katas, and I went and lifted weights and on my legs and my arms, and I felt like great, except my back's a little sore, the low back.
Okay.
I think it's from the snow this morning.
A little snow shoveling? Yeah, I'm counting snow shoveling as my workout for today. And I enjoy that. I look forward to it, you know?
Oh, I think that's a good way to do it. I was running the snow blower, but it ran out of gas and way in the backyard, and I pull it back.
My neighbor, very kind, came over and said, "Would you like to borrow the snowblower?" And I knew I wasn't going to have time for a workout today, and I kindly declined. But back to Chris Johnson. So what an interesting guy. This is really off the topic for our audience, but you have to hear it anyway. So Chris is a retired educator and was very much of a badass lifeguard tournament guy, one of these guys that rides these massive boats with oars into like 6 foot waves and yelling at guys and like a, really a monster. And, you know, he's close in age to you, right? Is it comparable
he's
in age?
He's 58.
So, and he's in incredible shape. And what he's done, besides this nugget that you just shared with me, is he has undertaken a class that my father-in-law intends for Parkinson's disease. And he gets these people feeling normal for at least a few minutes, and he does not take it easy on them. I've watched him really beating on these people, and they love it. My father-in-law goes, and my father-in-law is fantastic. Physical condition. His brain is perfect. He's just got the PD. So he's fighting. He's going to fight forever. And Chris jumping in there is a real bright spot for a lot of people. So I really want to thank him for that. And we all look for these people in our lives. And really, you don't even have to look, right? They're just right there in front of you.
Right, right. You know, he would be a really good person to interview one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a solid guy. 30 years at Ortley. I think he's not going back this year.
That's what I heard. Yeah, I heard he's hanging up the oars. Mm-hmm. It's a younger man's game going into those massive waves and all that, but yeah, really, really yeah. Interesting.
Really excellent guy.
So now I got you into the afternoon. All right, your brain is drained. You go recharge at the gym, and then what? Back to the office?
Go back to the office, man. Yeah. At that point, I'm like ready to go. I mean, I may just relax and nothing really bothers me at that point.
Yeah.
I'll answer some phone calls, make some phone calls. People are yelling at me. It's it doesn't bother me as much then because my brain is kind of like taking a good rest.
I love that, man. If all of our colleagues had two resets a day, you got the meditation reset, you got the gym reset. I also know that you're a man of spirituality and religion. So is that another reset? Do you work that into your day as well?
I talk to God all the time.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, it's just, I always say, Lord, I don't know what's going on,
yeah,
but you do. And that pretty much is my story because I...
So that's a mini reset for you.
Yeah, it probably happens about 1,000 times a day.
All right. That's funny because, I mean, this is not a show about politics or religion or anything to get people pissed off, but it is about the techniques of how people succeed in their day in practices, law practice. We had, you know, appraisers, everybody who gets up and has to serve clients dutifully, meet a code of conduct, make a living, bring some few dollars home to pay the bills and also keep your sanity. It's not always so easy, is it?
No. I guess the primary thing when you're in business, whether it be this or any other business, is you do have to pay the bills. You got to make, you know, be conscious about what time you're spending on this file, that file. And well, oftentimes you're spending time on files you're never going to see any money on. But I think it's a karmic kind of way of looking at life. I mean, you got to give here and you may not get anything back from there, but somewhere else you're going to get it back. And
yeah.
I think you just got to relax about life in that regard.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. If you don't have a little gratitude for each step you take, it can be a long day. And I find so many practitioners have a hard time with that they're stressed, they're strained, they maybe are not having those resets as frequently as it might benefit them.
I think you're right.
So We've been having a love fest, and this is fantastic. So let's talk about some of the rough spots. You know, what's some of the hard parts or the worst part of the practice of law?
The worst part is somebody firing you and saying, "I want my money back."
That's a bad one.
But if you're doing everything right, you have a good file, you keep track of your time, it all will work out in the end. I mean, there's nothing you could do about stopping somebody from filing a complaint against you, for the ethics complaint or a malpractice complaint. But as long as you've done your best and you have, in fact, documented your file and you didn't blow the person off, like when they call, you talk to them. But I get to a point where, if I have somebody who is, you pick up the phone and they're screaming at you. The first words out of their mouth, they're screaming at you. I can't deal with that. You know, I'm pretty much, I will literally just cover up the phone and I'll let them go on and on and on. And then I'll say, okay, you've stopped talking now. And I'll tell them what I think, you know.
Gotcha.
I think that's probably the worst part. If you have a client that's irate and not justifiably irate, it's different if you do something wrong or you disrespect them or you don't return their phone call or something, then you deserve it. But if you have in like an undeserving slap in the face or kick in the butt, you know, it's just, that's probably for me the worst, because you really try and do the best you can for folks. And I had a lawyer that sent me a real estate deal, and the deal was okay and got it through attorney review, and I had to do some extra work for it. And then the deal fell through for one reason. And the lawyer says, give me my money back, because he prepaid me. I think it was a tax thing for him. He prepaid me the fee.
Gotcha.
He says, give me my fee back. And I'm like, hold on a minute. I got a retainer. It says I've charged this much an hour.
Yeah.
I spent this much time.
Sure.
And he just went flipped out on me. I'm like, you're a lawyer yourself, but wasn't a practicing attorney.
I see.
He works for a company, a real estate development company. And so he doesn't really understand what it is to be a lawyer, really. You know.
I guess one tip is lawyer clients, beware.
Yeah, absolutely. They're the worst. Oh, they're the total worst, man. They know everything. They're trying to tell you how to practice, and you're like, usually they get fired. I fire them because you just can't deal with that.
Yeah,
you know?
I've represented some lawyers who gave me a run for my money, and I represented a few judges who had a hard time keeping their composure through the case. It can be very tough when you switch sides, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You remind me of a story. You know, my old partner, Rich Tomasic, one of my multiple old partners.
See him at the gym a lot.
And a guy who really, he's got his head on straight and has had it on straight a long time. A second career. Not too many people say, oh, I'm going to become a lawyer for a second career. He was a state trooper, getting shot at by bank robbers, and then he became a lawyer. And then this guy, he was my partner, and we're down the street at an old building. He owned a part of it, and the building's on fire. And I'm a lawyer. I'm like flipping out, get everybody out of the building, get the files. He just marches right into the breaker box while it's on fire, you know, puts his hand in there, flips it off, says everything's fine, you know. But he taught me by just listening to him. I want to please these clients. I want to do good for them. I want to make them feel like they're getting a lot for the dollar, but not everybody has that same ambition on the client side, right? So it all turned, this is many years ago, and I heard Rich talking to a client. I knew who it was. And he says, buddy, let me interrupt you. How did it go the last time you did it your way? Right? So again, not to be harsh to clients, but sometimes they just need to hear it that way. And that really worked. And I used that line from time to time, you know.
All right. What else can you do?
What else can you do?
I mean, that's a good way to approach it. And I always say to folks, I mean, usually when their problems are really massive and they want a resolution like now, and I always say, well, how long did it take you to get to where you're at?
Yeah.
And it's not going to be, it's going to take at least that long sometimes to get it back there.
Right.
Where the criminal clients or the motor vehicle clients that come in, and you can't make magic. You say, I didn't make the facts. You made the facts, not me. I'm just trying to apply the law best I can, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Clients don't mind asking us sometimes, not a lot of them, but a few, to maybe fudge the facts a little bit or fudge the ethics to help them and say, well, what should I say? They ask us. And you got to be careful. You know, I worked for Tom O'Brien, Judge O'Brien, and he was very clear. Say, you know, you tell them, tell the truth. That's what you. That's the first bit of advice when you're preparing a witness. You can help them shape it so they don't come across worse than they might. But the first advice always has to be, tell the truth, right? So we talked about maybe some difficult part of the job and difficult clients. How about the model client? What is the model client? In case there's one out there, I'd love to find one. Though we love all our clients, just kidding. What's the model client look for? And pick any area of the law you like.
You know, the model client for me is one that has kind of the same disposition as me, because I'm pretty relaxed and mellow, and they're willing. They listen more than they talk, because sometimes, you know, folks come in and they talk and talk and talk, and you have to listen to them, of course. But somebody who is will be willing to take your advice at one point. That's probably the best client you can ever have. And I don't mind people questioning when I give them advice. I like that. You know, that means, because they know more. You will never know as much about their case, right? They know everything, and that's important. And you need to know everything they know to a certain extent. But you really want somebody who's going to, once the general lay of the land is known by you, here's my advice. And if you want to take it, then that's up to you. But I can't force it to upon you. But the person that has paid me and now listens to me, and we resolve the problem, you can't.
That's a good day.
Yeah,
that's like a black belt in lawyering right there.
right.
That's good. That's really, really good.
It's true too. Yeah.
So I also know one other thing about you. You come from a pretty big family, right? So, and you practice in the town where you grew up, and you go to church in the town, you go to the gym, so you know a lot of people, right?
Yes.
I mean, just numerically, I don't know how many, but everybody who knows somebody who knows a Symantec family member knows you're a lawyer. That's a span of thousands of people, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if people feel left behind, i.e., you're a businessman, you've had some success, you know, you've undertaken things outside the law, and I'm going to tease you about one of those in a little bit. You ever feel like people come to you and say, oh, Dave, you've been a success, you know, you owe, or we're left behind, you left us behind. You ever get any of that?
I don't think I ever have.
All right.
No, I would never, you got to know. Practicing law, whether you know the person or not, when they call you on the phone, I mean, I have given out so much advice over the years to the person I knew or didn't know,
right,
that if I had a nickel for every one, I wouldn't be sitting here with you probably. But no one's ever said to me, Dave, you left me behind. I mean, because I think I'm generally a pretty kind person. I want to help folks, and again, if they're willing to listen to me.
Right, different issue.
Yeah. I mean, family or friend or foe. Mm-hmm. I think I'm pretty much even keeled with everybody, and I'll do whatever I can for folks.
Cool. You did something else in the middle of your career that, looking back, I admire you for even more. You built a house.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how was that challenge while you were practicing, while being a husband, while being, I mean, your kids were a lot younger then.
Yeah, they were young.
Little young kids, you know. I want to give you some credit, but I want to hear some tips about that too, in case anybody's that ambitious.
Well, luckily, my wife, she's an interior designer, and my father-in-law, rest his soul, he was a union man. I mean, he built Atlantic City casinos and McDonald's and houses. So he knew everything about anything. And we acquired the property in a funny way, right here in Toms River. The guy who owned it through his father was in jail, and they needed to post bail. So I post the bail, and that was my down payment on the property. And we got the property, and it's a beautiful piece of property. And Sherry and her father worked on it in 10 months. It's a big house too. In 10 months, they put it together. And from my end, it was right around the time when I started doing the direct mail marketing for municipal court stuff.
Okay.
Nobody else was doing it. Tarver was doing it down the street here.
Rob Tarver.
Me and him, we were killing it. I mean, at the end of the week, we have a stack. I'm telling you, Jeff, a stack like 2 inches tall of checks to deposit. It was crazy. And you were making money hand over fist. Thank God, because
yeah.
That's how I funded that project.
Got you.
Because ironically, you know, a few years after that, the unintended effect of that direct mail marketing is it reduced your fee. You know, people all of a sudden, they're calling 100, you know, 10 different lawyers.
Right.
They want your opinion, but really what they want is the cheapest price. And that's what happened with that. I think a lot of lawyers still do the direct mail marketing, but I stopped because of that reason. It just didn't make any sense anymore.
Gotcha.
But the home was a beautiful project. The kids were young. We all moved in, and I think it was October, and it was just and it still is a beautiful place to be. Though, believe this. You may have dreams, big, big dreams. And if you concentrate on it long enough, you'll probably get it. But what you don't necessarily understand is there are big commitments and requirements to keep that dream. And so, you know, when you got a $16,000 property tax bill in Tom's River and you're thinking, man, I don't really want to work as hard as I used to anymore, you start thinking, maybe it's time to change.
I got
kids
you.
Are growing. They're out of the house.
Right.
Let's move on, man. You know, I'm very, very happy there, but I'm trying to get my wife to understand it's time.
I got you. Well, I hit the jackpot with that question because I did not know anything about this bail posting down payment. That is a unique way that doesn't come around all the time. That's really, really cool. I really like that. Let's talk about your office because you've been a practitioner now a long time. You worked in Art Stein's office, and he had his way of doing it, and I'm sure it was excellent. And now you've had your own office a long time. You've had, I want to say, and the name escapes me, a staff member for a long time.
Yeah.
Am I right? What is her name?
Her name is Josephine Hatch. We call her Peppy, though.
Okay, Josephine.
If you met her and spent any time with her, you'd know why. She's the sharpest girl I know. She's really smart, and she's tough, and she's yet very sweet as well. And she can handle clients like you can't believe. She can do a good interview over the phone, get the essential facts for me, and then hand me the paperwork, and then I know what I'm talking about when I talk to that client. But she's really great. She was brought up in Philly as well as Connecticut, and then down here in she's actually in Bayville right now, and she's 65 and thinking about, like, it's time to wrap it up. You know, and we talk about this. Probably in a year she's going to be.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting part of my life. But I've had her as an anchor, and I've had, you know, different people were helping me on a part-time basis over the years. And that's always really interesting because people don't really know what the heck they're doing. Unless they've been working in a law office before, they can figure it out eventually, but it's fairly technical kind of work that you do. And the good thing about it, though, when you're developing the practice, is if you have a good storage of data in terms of pleadings and briefs and letters, you're just copying everything else from the last one. So you can get people to learn it if they're willing to learn it.
Right. Has technology stepped up those abilities in some ways for you?
Well, I don't really use, like, for instance, if I still dictate and it's transcribed by the secretary.
Right.
I know some lawyers use technology that allows them to speak and it prints out on the computer. I don't do that. I think that's probably a lot more work involved as well. But I guess the biggest thing is the fact that I think electronic and digital age in terms of documentation and emailing is all a wonderful thing. It has its own problems as well, like, you know, people stealing your information by going online and hijacking your computer and that type of thing. But certainly, I mean, you just think about when somebody comes to see you with a will that was written in 1985 and it's typed out and then they want to change something. And they say, can't we just do a codicil? No, we need to do a codicil. We'll just do it this way.
Right, you know? Right.
because it does. I think I don't know how people practiced in the past. You know, it's hard to understand. I was at a deposition a long time ago out in I think Western Jersey. I don't know where, Cherry Hill or something like that. And it was a big law firm, and they had a pamphlet that they had. I'm telling you, the law firm was over 100 years old, and they had a pamphlet about where this company came from, this law firm came from, originally from Philly. And they there's a great little story. They would talk about the lawyers that started it, the way they would do it. They would get up in the morning, early in the morning.
Right.
They would be in the office. They would do their work all day, maybe take a break for lunch. Then they would, at 5 or 6 o'clock, go upstairs to eat because they would be living in the same place with where they're working. And after dinner, they'd go back downstairs and work again.
Oh, man.
Yeah, to work till, 10, 11 o'clock. Because you know how hard it is to work now.
Yeah.
And if you didn't have any technology back then, I mean, everybody says, this lawyer profession is glorified. But unless you actually do it, you don't have a clue. It's a lot of work. So much time.
Time.
To do it right. You know, Rich Butz.
Yeah.
He's a great real estate attorney, probably one of the best here in Ocean County, in Toms River for certain. And we commiserate. We're not partners. We just share space. We commiserate all the time because to do the job right, you have to spend so much inordinate amount of time to get anything done. It's crazy.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned Rich. Yeah, I've known him for a long time as well. Excellent guy. I'll give a little commercial here. I picked up last year the Dragon app, and I put it on my iPhone, and it's $150 a year. I dictate. It's not perfect, but I then hand it off to a staff member who in literally minutes can take a brief, some pleadings, plug it all in, and they love me for this. They praise me and love me. So if Josephine goes bye-bye, you might be thinking about $150 investment in that dictation. Plus, you can dictate anywhere. You don't have to have your gadget with you. If you're dictating with a recorder, which I would normally do back in the day, you just have your iPhone and you just talk right into it. It's fantastic.
So the body of your paper, whatever, it's a letter or whatever, is already done pretty much. It's except to reread it.
When we're done, I'll show you a for instance.
Yeah.
Really a saver and no more or less work for you.
Because you're talking anyways, right?
It's the same thing for you. Yeah. Much less work. And although I've owned these things over the last, I don't know, maybe 18 years, they sucked 18 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's much, much better. The voice recognition is...
Thanks for the advice.
That's an easy one.
That's a way to get rid of, a body who's just doing that. I mean, because in essence, you could do it yourself.
When we had a bigger firm, we had a person who their sole job was typing. And that person has some other job somewhere else now. And I wouldn't need that. And I wouldn't have that. So if I had 10 lawyers working here, I would still have just a $150 app on their phone. And I still wouldn't need a typist per se. So that's just a little tip. All right, we're coming down to the end, my friend. So, big one. What is your big ask, or what is your big request? If you could be in charge of the world for a day, I'm talking about the lawyer, judge, court, your areas of practice, your bankruptcy practice, your IRS practice, what would be the big ask that you would put out to that universe and say, hey guys, if this happened, this would be a good thing for clients and all of us.
For my benefit, which is what I think...
You're in charge of the world for just a minute here. It's not going to last.
What I want to do right now, and if it could work for me, I'd be done. I'd work till, and I want to keep on working because it's important to keep active. Your brain has to work. And if I didn't have something to do every day, I don't know what I'd do. I'd probably be, I don't want to get into it. But I am really interested in the cannabis industry.
Yeah.
I think that is one area that is huge. New Jersey, 6 dispensaries, not a lot of work here. But Pennsylvania, 150 dispensaries. This is all medical marijuana we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a Pennsylvania license. It's just a matter of getting the right contact. I'm going to Colorado. My daughter's moving to Colorado on Monday.
Oh, wow.
Crazy girl. She's crazy. She just got married. She's 21. Married a 25-year-old. She moves. They go to India for their honeymoon. 2 weeks. And then they come back and jump in their car and drive down to New Mexico and then into Colorado. They come back and say, hey, you know what? We're moving to Colorado.
So, all right.
Just go for it. So my idea, we're going to go out there in May. I'm going to find a really top-end attorney who specializes in that area. Mm-hmm. And I'll pay him for his time to sit down with him and pick his brain and figure out if this is something I could really do. Because
I like that.
I really do believe in cannabis as a for an aid for medicine.
Yeah.
And recreational use, I have no problem with that either. And if I could be involved with that, I go around the whole country just as a consultant doing that kind of work, you know?
Neat. We got the meditation, got the karate, and we got the marijuana. What else do we need? What else do we need for this conversation?
Absolutely.
And then finally, as we wrap up, Dave, I'm going to give you a chance to do a little Dave Semanchek Law Office commercial. First of all, I'm going to spell your last name. Semanchik. How do people find you? And on the world, on the phone, on the internet, how do they find you?
The best thing is obviously go to the internet. My website's there. It shows everything that I do, has some good information about resources for your particular problem. The best thing that anybody could do is call me on the phone, right, and I'll talk to you. I may not be able to help you, but I'll give you some good ideas.
Yeah.
And it won't cost you a dime. That's probably the best thing you could do.
Best thing. So let's talk details. What's the phone number?
It's 732-240-4055.
4055. And how about that website?
The website is SemanchikLaw.com. That's SemanchikLaw.com.
And I think you're going to give an email address. You want to give that out to our vast audience?
Sure. info@SemanchikLaw.com.
All right. Very good. Any social media places that you're playing around with?
I don't spend any time on social media.
Well, once you get the marijuana thing going, you're going to be rocking that as well. All right. Listen, I really want to thank you for making this time for me. You're a very generous guy. You've been generous to me for years and years. It's my pleasure to know you and my pleasure to spend this time with you.
I tell you, Jeff, you're one of the guys around town that has done excellent work. People respect you. And anytime I spend with you, it's always an uplifting experience for me.
It's Attorney Dan Straffy. Thanks for listening to The Bold Sidebar. Share The Bold Sidebar with your lawyer friends and professional colleagues. Please subscribe on iTunes and check out the show notes for the episode highlights and links to resources discussed on the show. Give us your feedback on social media at Horn Law Group Divorce in a Minute, and of course, The Bold Sidebar. And tell us what you want to hear and who you want to hear it from.
Hey everybody, it's Jeff again. Need to find us? Check us out on the web at hornlawgroup.net. Or give us a call at 732-736-9300. Thanks.